This podcast is brought to you by Media8.
Welcome to Off the Cuff with Kel, Conversations from the Frontline, where we empower survivors' voices and challenge the status quo. I am your host, Kelly Humphreys, survivor, advocate, author, speaker, researcher, ambassador, and a seasoned former first responder. Supported by the team at Media8, Off the Cuff with Kel is about growth and healing, leadership through trauma, awareness, and understanding. We bring you compelling stories of courage, transformation, and expert insights, along with candid discussions on the challenges victims and survivors face. Off the Cuff with Kel celebrates our shared humanity, blending deep vulnerability with humor. Each episode is crafted with love, honesty, and the emotions that bind us, whether it's laughter or tears, promoting resilience and hope. Please note, some of the discussions we have can be hard to hear and include sexual abuse themes, online exploitation, domestic and family violence, and trauma. So, listener discretion is advised. Please join us as we change the world, one story at a time, embracing courage through vulnerability.
Guys, welcome to Off the Cuff with Kel. I'm so excited. I think we're at like episode number 23, if I know how to count, which you know that I struggle with mathematics. But episode number 23, I am so excited tonight. I've got the very lovely, formidable, handsome, he said he's had a shave tonight, John Cardamom with me, sharing tonight publicly for the very first time. So John, I'm so grateful to have you on Off the Cuff, so welcome.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's an absolute pleasure. And as you said, this is the first time I've spoken about some of the things that we are going to speak about publicly. So a little nervous, but really excited at the same time.
Yeah, look, nothing to be nervous about, John. We spoke for 2 hours the first time we talked, and I thought, man, I should have bought a bottle of wine. But we are going to be talking about some tough stuff tonight, but also I'm hoping that John will drop in some really bad dad jokes because he has two beautiful children.
Yes, boy and girl.
Yep. So I'm sure he's got plenty of dad jokes that he can share. So if you do think you're going to struggle or, are triggered by any of the content that we do share tonight, there's some numbers on my website at kellyhumphreys.com. So please feel free to head there and make contact with anyone you feel you need to. So, John, I'm so excited, firstly, that I got to meet you, but even more excited that I get to nab you before Bravehearts does. And I'm very excited because you are sharing at the Bravehearts Ball, which is coming up on the 8th of June.
Yeah.
Is that right? Gosh, I'm a Bravehearts ambassador here and I should know, right? So I think it's the 8th of June. So you will be sharing on a big stage in front of hundreds of people. So the exciting part for me is I get to have you first. So I'd love to hand over to you, and I'd just like if you could just to tell to our listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and a little bit about your story. So I know you like to tell stories, so feel free to take your time and share away, mate.
Yeah, so thank you for that lovely introduction. Born and bred in Melbourne. I know you're based in Queensland. So just to give people a little bit of a concept of where I live in a tiny suburb called Endeavour Hills, about half an hour from Melbourne CBD. Just really grew up in a pretty stereotypical kind of family, mum, dad, a couple of brothers and a sister. And love my wrestling. It's a memory that I keep forgetting because I'm a big Hawthorn supporter. But one of my first sports, before wrestling a sport, big Hawthorn fan of one of Hawthorn Manias. Anyone remembers that? Had posters all over my room. So, yeah, anything wrestling, like these early 90s, but that's my favourite time of wrestling. So Ultimate Warrior, if anyone remembers those days. But just your typical young boy that was really active, love my sports, had a thirst to play, always outside getting dirty, playing cricket, footy, soccer. Luckily enough to make friends easy. Just really lucky to have a pretty good childhood up until some unfortunate things happened that I'm sure we'll certainly dig deep and talk about. But Yeah, and but after that, which we'll speak about, I was fortunate enough to have a really good primary and high school experience, and we'll talk about what helped me have those good experiences. And it went through primary school and high school okay, and then decided didn't know what I wanted to do, but I got into concreting out of all things, which was kind of. Pardon?
That's where you get those big guns from.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that the dad bod is certainly kicking in, which I'm going to certainly work on. But, yeah, did that for 4 or 5 years, but knew it wasn't something that I wanted to do long term. So I just dropped myself into TAFE and just did a sales and marketing course. So I think that's one of the courses that you always do that you don't know what you want to do. And that led me into another course that I didn't know that I wanted to do. It was Bachelor of Commerce. So if anyone knows me would know that I have no idea about commerce and economics and all those sort of things. But then from there just led me into doing a Diploma of Education in primary teaching. So, yeah, I guess like a lot of us, we fall into things, and I fell into education, and I'm so grateful that I have, because I've got a lot of champions, and I'm sure we'll talk about those people and how it is to me and how lots of people with their healing or their challenges and their pathway. But and now, yeah, I'm something unfortunate that happened, but I'm grateful that I am here because of the unfortunate things. But I'm in a place where I have strength in my voice to try and help others along at the same time helping myself, but more importantly giving others a reason to come out and speak and encourage them and hopefully inspire them to seek help in a way that they can. So hopefully that's giving you a bit of a rundown, a little bit of a history from where we're at now.
Yep, no, that's great. When you said wrestling, I'm just like, man, I haven't had a wrestle for a long time since I resigned from the police. I'm like, damn it, I'm when I see you, it's on, mate. It's going to be on. I got a boxer friend, my wife, Tiffany. She's also from Melbourne, so we could do some boxing, some wrestling. I'm sure there'd be a few questions about what's wrong with my face afterwards. Yeah. But we can have a good time
though. Go easy.
Oh, okay. Righto. I'll try not to hurt you too much with my crazy police moves. So, look, John, you're mentioning the thing that happened. So let's talk about the elephant in the room. Look, I understand myself, and I've read a bit about your journey as you've shared in a blog on the Bravehearts website, which thank you for doing that. You know, it makes a big deal, particularly when men are brave enough to be able to, you know, have the courage to speak out and have these conversations, because it's very hard, I think, to find men who are strong enough to do that or willing to break the silence and be really public. So, you know, you don't have to go too much into it, but whatever you feel comfortable sharing, if you could just give us a little bit of insight about your journey through child abuse, and then I really, really want to talk to you about grooming, because like my story and like I share with my listeners all the time, 89% of child sexual abuse is perpetrated by someone who is known to us. Unfortunately, as you would probably know, it's so rarely spoken about. And a massive reason for this podcast and the reason that Off the Cuff exists is to try to break that stigma, so we can have a conversation about it that's not awkward, that's not difficult, that's, you know, kind of frees people up. As you sort of said, you hope to inspire other conversations to happen and other survivors to share. So essentially that's what we're doing. So I would love you, however you feel comfortable, to just share a little bit about your journey, and then, you know, we'll see where we go. We'll see where we go down this rabbit hole, my friend.
Yeah, no worries. And so I guess it all started, the child sexual abuse, that is, for me, was when I was around 6 or 7. So it was within the family unit. And it was over a period of 2 years, again, so I was around prep year one. So at a very vulnerable age where, you know, you have these trusting relationships with family members and close friends. And as a child, you're still navigating of what that means and what that looks like. again, especially at a vulnerable age, I think when we're all at that age, we want to be loved, and we love time with any adults as a child, because we want lots of adult attention. And I guess I was no different. Started when I was six, happened for a few years. It was ongoing, on a weekly, fortnightly basis. Unfortunately, at that age, I was kind of intimidated through threats. If I did tell anyone, threats against myself and some of my family members. So as a child, you can imagine that even as an adult, that could be hard to hear. So as a child, that's something that you don't want to happen to yourself or your loved one. So something that not sure if put up with is the right word, but something that you don't want to happen. So you're going through the motions, I think, is probably a good way of putting it. And just my memories from that, I still have some memories of some of those times. So some of them I explain in my blog, that they're like a movie reel. Something that I can't get out of my head. And I haven't really, and I shared in my blog, over 30 years I've coped relatively okay with it. It's just over the last year or so, which I'll get to. I don't want to go off track in terms of going back 30 years, but I'm 39 now, so this happened about 35 years ago. But, I keep thinking back. And I think the question is, one of the questions is, why didn't I say something earlier? And something that we can deep dive into. And I think that's another topic in itself. But just remembering the trauma now that I think about it as an adult that I had to go through, and the anticipation of going there, not being able to communicate my worst fears to a trusted adult. And every week enduring that was, now that I look back, I shared in my blog, that there would be vomiting. I had severe separation anxiety, as you could imagine. Nightmares, your night terrors and that sort of thing, that was quite consistent. Throughout those 2 years, my parents in particular, my mum, were so worried about me. I was seeing a child psychiatrist. Because my behaviour was getting out of control in terms of at school and at home, and my language, as prior, mum shared with me prior to the abuse happening, I was, a well-behaved child, and what that looks like today is different. But in terms of, following the rules and the routines of things, but things started to change when I was starting to get getting abused and groomed. Again, as I was sharing, seen as a child psychiatrist to try and figure out what was going on. And I think back as an adult, had a professional that couldn't unpack what was going on. And I remember those sessions. He kind of reminded me of Santa Claus, because he was a bit older back then. He had the white beard and had his pencil and notepad out and trying to figure out what was going on. But in the end, I was able to disclose with my mum, and I'm very lucky and very fortunate that she believed me unconditionally without any question, without questioning me, are you sure? And we can go into that, because I think that's been the biggest part of my healing process, is that someone believed me. And now that I'm getting into this kind of area and this work, I'm finding out that lots of trusted adults, carers and parents either don't believe, or they want to sweep it under the carpet because it's either too hard, or they just don't believe that someone, a trusted family member, could do something so unspeakable.
Yeah. I think, John, I've mentioned it in a few podcasts with various survivors who've shared, is that children don't make this up, and statistically 98% of children are seen to be telling the truth. So if there's ever anyone listening who has any doubts around a child disclosing abuse, please know 98% of them are telling the truth. And it takes a very well-groomed child to make something up like that. And it's so very rare. It's usually in relation to alienation, parental alienation, and child family court and things like that, where a child may be coached But again, that's dangerous territory. Children don't lie about this. So, you know, what you're saying, John, it's massive. Kids need to be believed. Definitely, 100%. You mentioned something right at the beginning that I think is really significant that I really want to talk about. And I just want to say before I forget, thank you for sharing a little bit about your story. I know there's a lot in there, but thank you for your courage in sharing. That's the first time. So, yay! Woohoo! You did it!
Yes, did it.
So, very proud of you, John.
thank you.
Yeah, so, mate, time is love. So you mentioned something in the beginning and, you know, we did entitle the podcast Time is Love, A Survivor's Perspective, because I really want to talk, and I don't even really mind if we don't get to anything else tonight because, you know, we can always come back, right? But I really want to talk about the two different sides of this. You know, time is love is a child who is experiencing child sexual abuse, and then time is love as John, for example, the educator who's got two beautiful children and cherishes time with his family, who sees time as love as a beautiful way of connecting. So there's like two extremes here, one where children who are vulnerable are manipulated and groomed, and that beautiful thing, that time, because time is precious, right? Like you can't get that back. I think that's almost the most valuable commodity you can give someone, right, is your time.
Absolutely.
And my story, like yours, was about that. My uncle spent time with me doing things I liked, like fishing and camping, right? So he would take me to those things and I'd be like, oh, my uncle's so great, right? So I guess I wanted to ask you, from your perspective as a kid and in that time, what did that mean to you?
Yeah, so I still have memories of my perpetrator taking me. I still have, and I don't think I've shared this with anyone, but I still have memories of him taking me yabbying with the net. It's something that I really do remember. So whether that was before or after the fact, the first time it happened, but I'm piecing that together, that that's part of the grooming process for perpetrators, is to, like you said, finding out what the child's interests are and really build that that trust in relationship, whatever that might be. And so obviously my perpetrator put a lot of time and effort and found opportunities, and his opportunity was to be able to get me alone. And from memory, there was at times there was some people in the house, but given the circumstances, it was still able to happen. But I think, as I was saying, every child, I'm really big on time, and my tagline is time is love. We've all heard that time is money, but I think it really is, the new tagline should be time is love. And every child, 99% of every child, just wants to have that time. And I think children understand love by us giving them quality time. Whether that's good or bad, we see that within the education system, that children just want attention, whether it's positive or negative, because it's something that they're missing for whatever reason. And my experience, although I got lots of love and affection from different aspects, it's something that I was used to and lucky enough, but I was also being groomed into having that time and love from a different perspective. I don't have much memory of, you know, piecing the puzzles of what that looked like exactly, but it was obviously he had a motive. And I think another part of this that we don't talk enough about is that these perpetrators groom the parents, because they need to gain, in order to gain access to myself and other children, they need to gain the trust of parents and the carers. And one way of doing that is building a trusting relationship that they're a good carer, you know, that they're trusting. And, you know, I can take your boy yabbying, fishing and all those sort of things. And that's how easy it is. And it's becoming more easy with, you know, social media. And, you know, we think of child sexual abuse as being physical, but it can be, you know, kids being held ransom of taking photos. And if you don't send another photo, you know, I'm going to share your first photo, and it just, as you can see it snowball. So it's certainly a big black hole that we're in, and I think we don't talk about it enough. But hopefully, I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but
that's okay. You're talking about actually sextortion, which is not so much, I guess it is ransom, but that's not a word we probably hear as much in this space. But basically, these perpetrators are asking for money, or they're going to share these photos online to their friend groups and things like that. So it is a massive problem. I actually had a wonderful meeting with some stakeholders today about doing some sextortion research. So very exciting. Massive, massive issues as we're moving forward, particularly with social media. And you're not even 40 yet, John. You're still below the big 40. But, you're definitely right on the technology aspect. It's really changing the way, we connect with children and things like that, which is tough. It's tough, right? Mm. And, I think you and I both growing up sound like, being outside was a big thing. You said something before about, like me. So I guess I feel really connected to you, in fact, in terms of our stories are really kind of aligned, my uncle being perpetrator. But you said something about what was missing, right? So I got all the love and affection I needed too. I have a very lovely butterfly mum who, is like a big hen, and she like tucks everybody under her arms and, home cooking, lots of hugs, all that sort of stuff. So none of that was missing. But I really liked doing these other things. And I think we get really angry at ourselves, particularly as adult survivors looking back, that we think we allowed this to happen, right? We say, like, it's kind of embedded into our psyche and our language, and we can hear it ticking over, and then we have this fight with ourselves saying, no, you didn't do anything wrong. We know we didn't do anything wrong. But internalizing that belief, when for so long this grooming has taken us on this path where we don't actually know how we ended up in the place we got to, right? And so there's a lot of kind of shame around that, because we're like, well, how did this happen? And we can't always answer that. And that's because exactly what you're saying, because of the grooming and parents, and I know there's a lot of parents listening. I think maybe your mum is potentially listening tonight, and
she's just in the room across the road, actually. So I've asked her to be quiet, but we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, right. She'll be like coming in there and be like, "Oh, give me a hug." But parents hold on to this guilt sometimes. Like, I'm sure there could have been signs. There could have been lots of different things. I think about this all the time with my mom, right? But perpetrators do, as you were saying, intentionally groom families in order to have access to children. Did you know that dating apps are a massive playground for perpetrators? So they'll purposefully seek out single female who have children in order to gain access to their kids. So this it is a targeted, specific tactic that perpetrators use, right? The hard part is letting go of our belief that we did something wrong in that process. But, it's really difficult, and there is an element of what is missing as well. And there's lots of different ways kids experience love. And from your point of view, especially as an educator working with primary school children, you would probably see this all the time, is that when children are missing the thing that makes them feel loved the most, if that gap is so clear, how easy it is for a perpetrator or someone outside of the family or within the family to fill that gap.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
I'd love you to maybe talk a bit more about that if you can.
Absolutely. I think with through my experience, now that I'm a father, and certainly not the perfect father, but I just, as we're speaking about, I completely understand that time is so valuable, and it's about the quality time that is spent with our children. It's about connecting with our children. Even though, I had a great connection with my family, and in particular my mum, I was a bit of a mummy's boy, probably still am a little bit these days, but I think my younger brother's taken the throne in that regard. He's listening too. Now I lost my train of thought, bagging other people.
Mummy's boy, your brother's taken the throne.
Oh, he has taken the throne, that's definitely for sure. I think connecting with our children, and I'm certainly no medical expert, but I would say in our society today, I think with social media, the whole purpose of the internet was to help with connection, but I think it's now we're in a space where it's just disconnecting us in a way. But, you know, it's good. It's got its lots of benefits, and this is one of them, obviously. But I think connection and feeling that sense of belonging is really missing, and that's what all kids need, and that's what they all deserve. If they don't have that sense of belonging, it can be find it really challenging to be able to disclose any of their worst fears and concerns, and that really comes back to spending quality time. So there's one aspect to educate our children around what would you do if so-and-so touched you on the bottom, but the other aspect is building that connection to get to that point. So we're not educating our children first. I think the foundation is, as a parent and as a carer, it's spending quality time, building those connections through having dinner, having games night, movie nights, and really building their sense of belonging within the community through sporting groups within school, you know, giving them opportunities to play with their friends. You know, it all sounds really easy. There's no parent handbook here. But at the end of the day, it's really simple. And everyone's got different challenges. Not every family is the same, but it really just comes down to spending quality time. And I think the missing piece is the quality time, because I think it's easy to spend time in the same room with someone, but if you're not looking at each other and you're looking down on a screen, and, you know, one's playing Fortnite and the other one's, you know, going to work emails, as soon as you get home for the next 4 hours and then your kids are in bed, you know, that's a really big missing link. There's huge opportunities, learning opportunities for our kids to learn. I think as parents and carers, we need to be held accountable that I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I'm just being honest, that we need to be held accountable and responsible to book quality time with our children. It's absolutely hard work. It's the hardest job, work, to be a parent or to be a carer. Some of us chose to be a parent, and I think it's up to us to spend that quality time. And I know some people don't, and you know, maybe that's a different discussion. But at the end of the day, our children rely on us as their protectors, and that's what they deserve. So whether they have challenging behaviours, whether they're the most perfect kid, they deserve our quality time and attention. And the only way that we can do that is if they have our full attention, because that's what they deserve.
Yeah, I think you talked to a couple of things there that I think are really important. And I think the first one is that you mentioned disclosure, and, you know, there's a lot to be said, I reckon, about, because I'm of the same belief as you. I think that actually connection is the greatest form of child prevention, child protection that you can have, right? A sense of connection, absolutely belonging. Because if you don't have those things, you're going to go and find them somewhere else. Yep, it's as simple absolutely. As that. So you get, in particular on social media, the Australian Centre to Counter Child Exploitation will tell us that it can happen in minutes, right? So you can have someone online that can groom a child within minutes and have them sextorted within 10 minutes. I've had kids, you know, make complaints to me when I was working in policing within 10 minutes of a first initial contact, right? Mm. So it can happen so quickly because they find a need and they meet that need that the child or, you know, young person feels like they have to respond. So, you know, it can be done quickly. In the in terms of, like, familial abuse, generally grooming happens over, you know, a bit of a longer period of time. But in my experience, once that abuse started, and John, I don't know what it was like for you, but I didn't feel, even after the first two times, it happened the one night and then again the next morning, and that was it. I felt like I couldn't say anything. I don't particularly know why immediately after that I felt, I think it was just internally I knew it was wrong. but I didn't have the words. And that was the other comment I wanted to make about what you were saying, is you didn't have a language around your experience to be able to describe what was happening to you. And, you know, that's what happens. This is the part of the grooming, and we beat the shit out of ourselves for our entire life thinking, well, I should have said something, right? But it takes a long time. Like, I am over 40, John. Like, you know, I've tried really hard for the hairdresser to take all my gray hairs out. But, like, I have a few, right. Okay?
No, I've got a lot on my side, so I'm catching up. I'm not even 40 yet.
Yeah, I said that John told me he got all dressed up for tonight and had a shave, and I said, oh, I did too. I've got a few chin hairs. It's all good. But, yeah, so I totally lost my train of thought now. John, what are you doing to me? Language around your abuse. And, like, Bravehearts didn't exist when I was a child. It was probably started when I was 10, and then maybe by 12 I kind of figured out that shit was wrong, and then I didn't know what to do about it. So totally in alignment with your protective behaviors and educating kids and feeling safe and connected. But I did want to add something else, and I'm not sure a lot of people realize this, is that the trauma brain, right? So we have cortisol in our body. So cortisol is like a stress hormone. So when we are confronted with a situation that's not okay, our body will respond with a stress response, right? So we get so angry because we're like, oh, I didn't say anything. Oh, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to say it. But we don't actually biologically understand as children the reasons why that might happen. We just think that we were weak, or we couldn't say anything, or a coward, or whatever. I thought that. But it's actually that the brain becomes so flooded with chemicals that physiologically we actually physically cannot speak. So if anyone is out there listening and they're like, I should have said something but I couldn't, or I should have said something but I didn't know how to, please know that your body did what it was meant to do. Like, we get angry for the way that our bodies respond to trauma, right? I don't know, John, did you have experiences like going through this where you thought, I don't know what's going on, I'm so stressed? Like, you talked about being sick.
So I have really strong memories of having huge separation anxiety from especially with my mum. And look, we'll never know if that had an association with what happened to me. You could bet your bottom dollar that's obviously probably a big link. With that, for obvious reasons, not wanting to leave a protector and going into a space where I knew what was going to happen. So when you talk about the brain, and now that I'm a little bit more educated in this field, and knowing, you know, getting into the flight and fight response, and what I've been reading is that, you know, the younger you are and the more times that you're in a flight or fight response, that can really have an impact on your later years. And I'm more than happy, I don't want to go off track, but it really explains, you know, I shared that over 30 odd years I've been relatively okay. I haven't turned to drugs or alcohol to escape the hurt, so to speak, but I've been really triggered in the last year or so, and I've, you know, had spikes of anxiety, and now that I think back, you know, and I did ask some professionals, does that have anything to do with my fight or flight response being, you know, my brain being flipped, so to speak, in terms of being heightened? And absolutely, it's categorically got to do with your brain being in a fight or flight or freeze mode, and that can have an impact. And, you know, I don't want to get all scientific because I'm certainly not a scientist, but, you know, when you're at that age, you know, all your neurons are connecting, and through trauma, they're not really, unfortunately, they're not connecting with the pathway that they should be, and that can certainly have an impact in your younger years, but more so in your later years, because I think children, we're really resilient, and we put a lot of protective mechanisms in place to protect ourselves. But for me, becoming a father and my son being at the age that I was sexually abused. That's really triggered me. And I'm in a really good place now, but it's taken me a lot of work to get to this place. And you know, I'm still a work in progress. I'm not on this podcast and I'm 100% fixed and, you know, I'm all good. It's absolutely still a work in progress, and I still have my moments and still have my anxiety that goes through the roof. And, you know, I'm driving my mum insane, calling her for reassurance and my wife and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's where it comes back to champions, because for most of us, and not everyone's up for speaking, and everyone has their own strategies, but I think for most of us, if we can speak about it, that's a really great way to start healing. But and I do apologise if I've gone off track, but I think for your listeners out there, and if you're listening and, you know, they're kind of starting and they've just been triggered after 20 or 30 years and trying to understand why wasn't I triggered sooner, or and, you know, I've learned that with child sexual abuse or any kind of trauma, it can come at any time. There's no rules with trauma. It might never come, or your brain is protecting you in such a way that you don't think about it. And maybe if I didn't have kids, maybe I wouldn't have been triggered. I remember the moment that I was triggered, and I haven't really shared this with anyone. I'm probably going to trigger the person that it involves, actually, if they're listening. But I remember where it all started. You don't mind me sharing? Is this something that...
You go right ahead.
Yeah, I remember about this time last year, I was talking to my sister. I was actually in my son's room, so I apologise, Bianca, because I know that you're listening, you don't know this yet. But and we were talking about the past, about what had happened to me and some of my family members, how they responded, that sort of thing. And for whatever reason, that was the start of me being triggered. I've just had a sense of panic. I had a sense of – I was reflecting back of explicit moments of when the perpetrator was doing some explicit things to me, and asking him to stop. And in those moments, I was thinking about my son being in that place, in that very moment. So everything was the same, the place, the perpetrator, but I was replaced. And one of my triggers is being out of control in certain situations, and I felt out of control, because as a parent, you'd die for your kids. I shouldn't say this, but you'd also kill, or you'd have that feeling anyway. So I don't want anyone reporting me, but you certainly have those feelings of those protective mechanisms. So that's kind of where it's all started. And so that's no one's fault. It was always going to happen at some stage, but it's just really important that triggers can come and go. They're never going to go away, I don't think, but it's the way we manage them. And I'm really big on to manage this, you need to be showing up with intention, purpose and consistency. So what I mean by that is have a strong intention of what you want to do. And so my intention is to be the best role model that I can be for my children, because that's my responsibility as a parent. I have a strong purpose, and that's connected with my intention that I want to be I work in education, so I want to be a really cool role model for any interactions that I have privately or professionally. And we need to do that with consistency. So, we can't be – it's like training. You know, if you're doing weight training, you do it for a week and you're not seeing results because you're doing it inconsistently, that's no different with our character and our beliefs and our core values, and we need to do it with – and we're going to have bumps. You know, it's going to be a challenge. You know, I've cried, I've shook with anxiety and all, and it acted really silly and stupid now that I'm looking at myself in third person. But that's just the way the mind works. And I'm really lucky for the listeners. I'd highly recommend finding your champions. And what I mean by that is really connecting with people that believe in you and trust you. And, you know, and some people don't have that. But I guess we're really fortunate. We're in a position where we've never been resourced to get help. You know, so we can call anyone at any time, you know, 5 to 25. You can call Kids Helpline and speak to an expert. You can call Beyond Blue, Lifeline, and you can talk to someone. And that's the connection that you might need. And sometimes the connection with someone that you don't know is sometimes the best connections, because you feel safe that you just call in and you're speaking to someone, you know, and they're not seeing you and they don't understand the whole thing, but you just need to vent. So, yeah. So, again, I think I've gone off track, but I think it's really important.
No, it's actually really great. So just to recap, purpose, intention, and
purpose and consistency.
And consistency. I really like that because, and you talked about triggers, and we're mentioning triggers a lot in this, and I always say, so the quote is, the body reveals when it's time to heal, right? Mm-hmm. So in our life, I don't believe that things come up until we're ready emotionally to deal with them, right? So we got kind of two choices, and when those triggers pop up or the things, you know, we have an anxiety attack or whatever, we got two choices. We can intentionally move through it and we can consistently do this, right? Because as you said, I do think triggers go away, but the memories don't go away, and we learn, as you said, to move through those things. Like we learn ways of coping. Some ways are good and some ways are not so good. But if we're doing this with intention and consistency, I think that that's how we heal, right? But if we constantly are getting triggered, but we're not actually doing the work or getting the support, and again, you call it champions, I call it tribe, having that support network around you is just so vital to our healing. And instead, and we talked about this last week, if you listen to the episode with Tiffany Cook, it was an amazing conversation that we had, is that moment that you feel like you're choked up, you're going to cry, you can either cry or you can like suck it up and be like, no, I'm not dealing with this right now, and you just kind of do something else, or you dismiss that you're actually having a feeling about it. So we can't heal if we're going to dismiss those feelings and emotions. Like, yeah, we're not actually going to be doing ourselves any favors. So I guess, John, you said it beautifully with your three strategies there. And, you know, likewise, I just reiterate and just to encourage those who are out there who do struggle with their triggers is, you know, when the body reveals it's time to heal, take a deep breath. If you can't get through it on your own, you know, contact your champions or, you know, use your tribe that you have, because we need those people. You know, I need those people. You might think I'm showing up here and I'm like, oh, she's all good. No, I'm not. I, you know, survivors constantly need validation, unfortunately, until they're able to shift that shame, you know, and that imposter syndrome and those types of things that kind of hold us back. Until we're able to shift that and unequivocally stand in our own power, you know, it often takes reverting back to our mom, our dad, or our tribe, or our champions who are around us to be like, man, did I do okay? Is this okay? Like, we often do need that validation. So there's nothing wrong with you. It's actually just the journey to healing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you raised a really good point about validation. I think this is a separate issue to the issue, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I think any kind of trauma, it's really important to be validated, especially as a child, especially as a teenager, and especially as an adult. So, part of my journey is having that validation for all members, and that's not that. Unfortunately, that's not for me at the moment, but that's something that I'm working through, and that's okay. I'm dealing with that okay at the moment. Took a little bit of work, but me being on this podcast and sharing my story on the social medias and that's part of my journey in healing is evidence that I'm progressing in terms of not needing validation from everyone. The only validation I need is myself as a father, and ensuring that I'm protecting my family through education and being a role model. So, but again, I was very fortunate. I get a lot of questions about my healing, and I just want to say that I wouldn't be where I am today without my mum believing me right away. And I have thanked her, but I just want to thank her publicly for unconditionally, you know, I can feel her emotion, getting emotional. But I really do mean it, because I hear from so many people, even the Braveheart CEO, She keeps saying that my mum's magical because, unfortunately, for so many children, that's not the case, especially, you know, being, you know, brought up in an Italian strict family with education probably not at the forefront. It was just getting the next meal together, so to speak. So for her to be able to believe me and call the authorities without thinking that this is, you know, I need to question him more just in case. But, yeah, so and I think I wouldn't be the person that I am today if she wasn't able to, yeah, if she didn't believe me. So that was certainly the biggest part of my healing journey. So thank you, Mum.
Oh, I love it. I love it, John. And I think it's really important that you shared that so beautifully and vulnerably because I think we underestimate the power of that belief. You know, and what that means to victims and survivors. And I'd love to do an episode on victim blaming because I think a lot of times when we do disclose, those questions make it seem like it's our fault, you know. So I just love how beautifully you put that. And I thank you. What's your mum's name?
Mimma.
Sorry, that cut out on me, but.
Mimma.
Mima, thank you for believing. I can't wait to hear John speak at the Bravehearts Ball. I really can't wait to see him grow in this space and especially to be a leader and a role model for men. So you've had a very important part of that. So thank you on behalf of all the survivors who we represent. So amazing. John, I just want to ask you, I've got a couple of things I wanted to mention. Particularly as a dad, so you talked about being triggered when you saw your son, right? Mm-hmm. I really want to ask your advice, not for me so much, but for dads who are listening and parents who are listening who struggle when they've been a victim and then have had children. Because I know it's an issue. I know for my mom it was an issue when I was born. She's like, I never wanted this to happen to you. And, you know, I'm a massive believer of having age-appropriate conversations about your experiences. I think that's huge. We love them like, oh, well, I don't want to tell my kid that. I don't want to expose them. I think you need to. And I think children need to know. But I'd love to hear from your perspective as a dad some of the strategies that you use, you know, when you're thinking about your kids and just getting through those moments.
Yeah. So how I teach my own children or – if I'm feeling triggered.
As a survivor yourself and, you know, and having children really, like around that, whether you're a mum or dad or whatever, a carer or guardian, I think that's really important for victims and survivors who got children.
Yeah. And I think as a survivor of child sexual abuse, a lot of it comes down to, you know, being really protective and probably overprotective, and we know long-term that's not ideal. You know, I keep saying to my wife, my son's going to be the best priest and my daughter's going to be the best nun. So we'll see how that goes. But but that's probably been overprotective in terms of wanting to shelter and wanting them to live with me and my wife, my beautiful wife, Christine, forever. But we know that's not going to happen. So we do need to let go. Hopefully when they're about 45 or 46, I can. So that should be.
You might change your mind when they get to teenagers.
Yeah, well, anyway. But I think what's really important as a father, being a victim of child sexual abuse, is I said in my blog, is to give yourself time and attention. I'm one that everyone says you've got to give yourself time to give your best self for your children. But I'm in a mindset that my kids come first no matter what. So whether that's right or wrong, but I think that there does need to be a balance in terms of looking after yourself to be your best self for your children and your family. And it's just giving yourself that time and attention. So for me, I like to get up early and do my workouts because for me, knowing that, you know, I would feel bad if I came home from work and then, you know, missing out more time. So for me, it makes me feel better and not as guilty if I do it in the morning when everyone's asleep. So I think finding strategies and ways that you can look after yourself and You know, I don't like to say put yourself first, because I think as a parent, your kids need to come first. And right or wrong, I don't want to. I'm happy to agree to disagree with people, because I know you need to look after yourself. But I think as a parent, if you are feeling triggered, I think first of all, it's okay. There's nothing wrong. I thought, what's going on? You know, I should have been triggered years ago. And you know what? I was triggered in different ways, in indirect ways, and happy to unpack that. But I think as a parent, it's okay to be triggered, that it's quite normal. I'm finding out that it's quite common once you become a parent that you can be triggered, because you're putting your kids in the space and you have these emotions of that you just feel anxious that might happen to your children, or something else bad might happen. So you're putting all these protective. I mean, when I go out, you know, this might sound, you know, but I'm thinking of the worst. So I'm thinking of, okay, crossing the road, there's a dog there, there's a kangaroo. So I'm in that mindset. So right or wrong, that's how I am. So just give, I think people listen, give you permission to think like that. You know, don't fight it, because I just think it makes you a good parent, a protective parent, and it's something that you just work through. I think these days, if you are a protecting and a loving parent, we're off to a really good start. And I don't say that sarcastically with some of the things that are happening within the world. So, and I think getting help. And so I know a lot of people, you know, they find it difficult to speak, and that's okay. So whether they're ready or they never want to, because there's different ways of getting help. So whether that's finding a hobby, I know for me that I look back, I played heaps of sports. Now that I look back, that was a little bit of a savior for me, feeling that connection and that sense of belonging. So I think if you're able and you can communicate, there's a little bit of a responsibility that we need to be able to seek help.
No, that's really good. Actually, there is a question from one of our live members around how you cope with your child throwing sort of what has happened to you in your face kind of thing, and how soul destroying that is. And I think what you're alluding to is getting help, I think is massively important. And I don't really know how I would particularly deal with a scenario like that. I think it would be very soul destroying. And if you've got any perspective, John, I'm sure it would be welcomed. But my feelings around this would be having a really brave conversation to let those kids actually know what has happened and, you know, how it makes you feel and those types of things. I think, you know, take some ownership on what's going on there. But if even that's not working, then I'd suggest that it's something that you might need to get some more help with. I don't know.
Yeah.
As a parent.
Yeah, as a parent, and I think there's, as I was saying, there's lots of different avenues to seek help. And I think we're in a position where there's lots of family therapy family counselling, that families can come together, and there's lots of professionals that can do that and help unpack that. It's a really difficult question. I think it really comes back to it's really stripping back. It's really stripping back, because when you're in the volcano, when things are happening, sometimes you're not going to get anywhere. It's a bit like when a child is having a tantrum and you're trying to talk them down, it's just not going to happen. So you're just going to have to wait until the volcano settles. And when everything's calm, that is a really good way to set the benchmark. And it might be to not talk about the volcano conversation, if you like, but it's just reconnecting. So finding ways that you can reconnect with your child or your teenager and taking the pressure off. So whether that's, you know, going out on a date in terms of, you know, having a coffee, doing something really fun, I think really stripping back and really focusing on building connection and a sense of belonging. And it might not be with your child. It might be giving them opportunities to build that connection and sense of belonging with another trusted adult. And that's where a champion would be really helpful, because when you're in the fire, you know, sometimes you can't find the water can, so that's where someone else can really come and help you. So I would highly recommend, and what's helped me is having champions around me. If I was in that position, I would certainly strip right back and get out of the volcano, so to speak, and start the foundations again, which can be really difficult. And there's no quick fix. So I think that's one thing to know. But I think we're here for a long time. They say life is short, but life can be really long in a good way. So I think that's really important to remember. Yeah.
I think one thing you touch on, and this is also for those who experience emotionally abusive relationships, is sometimes, and this is just kind of validating what you've just said about when you're in the fire, it's really hard to respond clearly and appropriately and to think logically when you're so hurt and emotional about something. So I think it's really significant what you've said about just, you know, while it hurts at the time, and look, this could come from anyone in your family, because I know there's a lot of families that haven't listened, that when you've disclosed, they haven't, believed you. They get angry at you. You did this. You said that. That didn't happen. Like, there's a lot of blame put on you for something that you had nothing to do with. Like, it's not your fault, right? And so this conversation is not just about your kids, but it's about other family members who might place blame on you, or victim blaming type things that's really hurtful, right? And so it's really difficult to get through that if you're so emotional, so angry, and so hurt in that moment. So I think you've said some really important things about, you know, trying to build the foundations again to have a safe conversation, because obviously when that volcano is erupting, it's not safe, right? We don't want to go there. So we'll either, you know, go into our trauma responses. We'll either get angry, so we'll fight and yell and scream. Flight, it will either, you know, just ignore it or disappear away from the conversation. Freeze, you won't be able to say anything. Or you'll just go with it, right? So form, you'll just whatever you think that you need to do to make sure that they're happy, and never actually share your voice, never actually say what you need to say. Great question, great answer. Hopefully that's answered the question for our audience member. There's another question there, which I'm going to hand right over to you, John, around, as an educator, do you find yourself being worried about changes in students' behaviour?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question. I think as a community, I think social media is having a really big impact. So whether I worked in education or not, I think social media is having a really big part in, I think it's even adult behaviour. So although there's always concerns around, children and their behaviour, I think it's really up to us as adults to role model. So when it comes back to social media, you're trying to change behaviour where children are on iPads or, you know, on their phone, but then the parents are on the phone themselves, but they're telling their child to get off the phone. So I think it stems back to role modelling the behaviour that we want to see in our children, as a parent, and as a community member. So whether you're a sports coach, whether you're walking down the road, whatever it might be, I think children's behaviour is always going to change given the circumstances of the changes of technology, society, beliefs, world events. But I think it's always a concern. But you know, I don't like to say that it's simple, but when you think about it, it is simple, hard at the same time, but it is a worry. But there's also an opportunity, a great opportunity, that we have more podcasts like this to try and help and educate people. And it really comes down to, if we want to change behaviour, it really comes down to us as adults being responsible and accountable to role model what that looks like. Because you know, we expect children to understand, how to act socially. We expect them to understand how to be resilient. We expect them to be, you know, to show integrity. But, you know, we forget that we teach our children maths and English and writing, you know, so many hours over the week. And we do that for a reason, because it's hard to learn. And that's no different when it comes to all those character traits. And as adults, we're still learning. So we need to be patient with our children, I think we, as a parent, are getting patient, and you have to remind yourselves it is a journey, and children deserve our attention, and they deserve our patience. And it can be really hard. Yeah, I know my neck vein certainly is out of meter here with sometimes, but you just got to keep reminding yourself that children usually don't behave in a way that's wanting to be malicious, and that can be debatable. I'm not sure what the age that might change, but usually when we're talking about really young children, you know, I'm talking under 6 or 7 or 8. So it's up to us to role model. But absolutely, it's always a worry. But when I think of worry, I think of opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I guess it doesn't really matter if you're a parent or an educator. I think there's an opportunity for a conversation. So, you know, if you're seeing a student's behaviour change or your child's behaviour change, that connection that you've built is really significant, because they know that you're a safe person to talk to. And I think it's a bit harder in education settings, like in schools and things like that. But if they know that you're consistent and have integrity, they're always going to come to you. And even as a school-based police, I worked in schools for 7 years, kids would always come to me because I built connection and relationship. It's about that relationship. And I know it's hard because there's lots of boundaries in schools, but I don't think there's any reason you can't have a conversation with a child and build that connection still. So, and when you do pick up on those changes, you can be like, oh, mate, you're not well today. What's going on, you know? And you can open up those avenues for conversation, which I think is really important. So
it all comes back down to connection and having a sense of belonging and a sense of hope.
100%, 100%. Is there anything else that you want to add? I guess I've got one question left, and it's, what would you say to little John? What would you say to little John right now as an adult looking back?
I would say that that I'm really proud of the way that he's turned out. Although I'd just like to make a point, although I didn't I shared that I didn't have addictions to drug and alcohol. I certainly had addiction to exercise and my diet. I think I was down to 7 or 8% body fat, and that's, looking back, that's probably not healthy or sustainable. But, that was probably my addiction, so I just thought I'd share that. But I would say I'm really proud of the way that I've been able to navigate some real big challenges. And I'm sorry that he had to go through that, and it was so strong to be able to navigate through and be a citizen that contributes to society. I have reflected on myself back then, and I can't help but be sad for that little boy, knowing he knew what was coming, and it made him feel sick and wanting to vomit. And that must have been, you know, I don't remember the exact feelings, but that must have been horrendous. And it makes me really sad, because I know that's happening for a lot of our children around the world. And it's actually really sad. And that's why I'm so strong on that. As adults, it's our responsibility to make sure and to be accountable to protect children. And it's really simple. It's just giving them time and attention to build that relationship, because that's what it really comes down to. But I would just say that I'm really proud that I've been able to be resilient. But I just like to say that wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't be the man that I am today without my mum in particular. But I wouldn't be the father that I am without my wonderful, beautiful wife, Christine. I'm batting well above my average, I might say, but even though I'm looking okay tonight. But I just want to share that she's watching at home, and I had to come to my mum's place, otherwise they'd be screaming and yelling that you would hear in the background. But, yeah, she's super, my wife, Christine. She's the love of my wife, my soulmate. I am the person I am, the father I am and husband I am because of her. So I just want to thank you publicly, Miss Christine Cardamone, even though you know that and I tell you that I love you, but I think it's nice to be able to acknowledge that in a public forum, if you don't mind. So I just want to be thankful.
You're giving me goosebumps, brother. Goodness me. Our tribe matters so much, John, but we are out of time. So I want to say thank you, and I just want to kind of reiterate your words to the survivors listening. And I just want to say what John would say to little John, that we are proud of you. You got through, you're okay, you know, and you can do this. So thank you for your vulnerability and for sharing your story with us, John. So, you know, I'm excited to see again how you grow in this space, and excited to hear from you at the Bravehearts Ball. So moving on from here, so just coming up next week, I'll be interviewing my research team. So you guys will hear for the very first time out loud what I'm doing with my research, and having a chat around online child exploitation and the survivor's voice within that online abuse. So it's really powerful research. It's the first of its kind. So a little bit excited about that. And just want to pop up on the screen the Reclaim Your Freedom. So if you don't already have a copy or you haven't read it, it's a free book for you to download. So if you can just pop up the QR code, Linda, that'd be great. So jump on and grab that. And guys, next week, in a fortnight's time, we'll be back with another episode of Off the Cuff with Kel. So thank you very much for being a part of the show, for all your questions. And if we didn't get to them or didn't get to answer them, we will all make sure I jump in and answer those for you. Okay. All right. We will see you soon. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you, John. And see you next time.
Thank you so much for being part of Off the Cuff with Kel. Breaking cycles of abuse and trauma is not something that can be done alone and requires all of us working together. Your support makes a huge difference. If you've found the content of this podcast valuable, you can find me on all major social media platforms. Through my website, kellyhumphreys.com, you can contact me for speaking and workshops, as well as purchase my first book, Unscathed Beauty. If you found any of the content today distressing, please reach out to appropriate support agencies in your country. For emergencies, contact your local law enforcement agency.